we should just go ahead and get started, keep the time. We just turn on the corner. Just introduce ourselves. David Jordan. I'm council staff for the planning council.
I'm Jen Cust. I'm a care navigator at Shanti.
Don Soto, HIV council member.
I'm Aisha Underwood. I work here in the Chet branch.
I'm interviewed with Lynn Van Dyke with the permanent homeless and supportive housing.
I'm Eric Brown from Catholic Charities.
I'm Becca Schwartz from Positive Health Program, Ward 86.
I'm Liz Stumm, planning council staff.
Ali Cohn with council staff also.
So, generally, when we do, generally these kind of meetings are made up of primarily planning councils, planning council members. But since we're asking for sort of outside input and collaboration, sort of this is slightly different. So, generally, only council members would be allowed to have a vote. But since this is a collaborative work group, everybody who's here will be considered part of the work group and will be allowed to vote on all things on the docket, including Naisha, if you would like to be part of the group. She's often here as an observer. In that vein, if you could all just sort of review and approve the agenda, if there's any objections to anything on the agenda, let me know. Otherwise, I will consider it approved by consensus. No objections? All right, move on. Any announcements? Nope. Cool. Public comment? No. Thank you.
So the next one is co-chair nominations. So for this work group, this is a little distinct from work groups that typically happen on the council. Since it looks like we only have one council member here, it won't be that different for most of the group. What we usually do for this group, since the bulk of the work is performed by council staff, in this case Dave, we usually have Dave serve as one of the co-chairs, and there's typically two co-chairs.
So the next step would be sort of going through the process of nominating co-chairs and quickly voting upon that. So
I nominate Dave Jordan.
Thank you, Don. I will accept your nomination. We have one more. We can vote on them as a slate.
So the responsibilities of co-chairs, too. So obviously Dave holds the large majority of it, since this is his job to carry out the work of the work group. At the needs assessment, and the other co-chair, the responsibilities will be around forming the agenda and facilitating meetings.
Largely that's organizing sort of speakers lists and things like that. So, Don, do you feel like if I were to nominate you, would you accept that?
Only if nobody else would take it. I have a lot on my plate right now, but if nobody else is able to take it.
All right.
I mean, it seems like there's no more nominations. Maybe we can vote as a slate on Don and Dave as co-chairs. And I think just a hand vote is fine. All in favor? Any opposed? Any abstentions? Abstentions or opposed? Okay. Great. All right. Congratulations, Dave and
right.
Don.
Cool.
Thank you.
Now we can actually move on now that we're done with sort of all of that. So, really quickly, I'm going to get started and sort of outline the scope of work. So, the Planning Council, as some of you may know, has recently undergone a merge between the Prevention Councils and the Care Council, Prevention Council and the Care Council. On the Care Council side, we have a mandate from HRSA to perform a needs assessment annually. This is our efforts to fulfill that mandate. In years past, we've done a comprehensive needs assessment, And oftentimes that was a middling success. That was before my time, but I have gone back and looked at a lot of the materials developed in there. And recently what we've done is move towards targeted needs assessments. So in the past few years, we've done needs assessments on Latino MSMs, transgender women, crystal meth users, African Americans, Asian and Pacific Islanders, people with HIV positive people with self-reported mental health challenges. That was last year. This year, our target is people who are homeless or unstably housed. So the idea is that by focusing on defined as our special populations or severe need populations, which generally are made up by groups with the lowest uses of ARTs, as well as poorer health outcomes than the general population. Those are generally also groups that have language barriers or other barriers, so that includes all of those populations that I just listed. Also, one I forgot was aging population. We did actually twice in the last 6 or 7 years because it's been such an area of concern. So the idea is that by focusing on these groups one at a time and being able to get a better sense of what each specific group's needs are, we can actually gain better data. And I feel like that has been proven true, that was sort of borne fruit for our purposes. And then, we sort of are able to compare them year over year to get a better sort of comprehensive sense of what population is we're looking at and what their needs are. So I also need to sort of point out that because this is a HRSA-mandated activity, even though we are a council that is concerned with both prevention and care issues, this particular thing is primarily going to be focused on care, although we would like to endeavor to add in maybe some prevention questions to the survey or elements that address some prevention concerns, such as PrEP or other risk behaviors and things like that. That's go ahead.
And then just a quick add on to that, it also means that the target has to be HIV positive folks who are homeless or unstably housed. So they have to be positive also. That's part of the target.
Yes, thank you. Though that said, it is all self report. We do our best to sort of vet people who take part, participants who take part in the needs assessment, but it's generally not something that I'm going to pursue aggressively to try and weed out people who are lying to me just to get a $25 gift card, which is the incentive. It happens. I think we do a pretty good job of making sure it doesn't happen much. And that also has to do with our collaborators and people who help us with recruitment. So in general, in the past we've done, our focus group has mostly been, our needs assessments have mostly been developed through focus groups. A couple years ago, we began combining that with one-on-one interviews. So for some part of the population, we found that it is more effective to invite them to focus groups. Some people don't feel as comfortable speaking in focus groups and would prefer to do one-on-ones. I feel like they both have value. When you have a group of people with similar interests, similar concerns in a room, you tend to get sort of a conversation builds on itself, and you get sort of popcorning of ideas that maybe wouldn't happen with just an individual, but also with an individual where it will take more time and get a sort of deeper sense of what their needs are. We do both. Generally how this works is have a couple planning meetings, develop some targets for outreach, maybe some ideas around collaboration agencies that are interested in collaborating, or can help us with outreach. And then we just sort of jump into it. The focus groups themselves and the one-on-one interview sort of mirrors this in some ways. It's generally made up of a facilitated conversation wherein we discuss quality of life issues and service utilization and barriers to care and sort of efficacy of service categories. We do an exercise wherein they prioritize the HRSA-defined service categories. So one thing important thing to note here is that as far as the council goes, we don't necessarily interact with agencies. We interact with service categories. So DPH sort of handles the contract management and actual agency interactions. We just sort of have the next level up, and we do our best to really not discuss specific agencies with clients, consumers. So occasionally they'll want to get into talking specifically about a specific agency or a specific provider at a specific agency, and we do try and avoid that as much as possible, but sometimes it has a lot of bearing on what their concerns are. Those two pieces make up the largest portion of it, the facilitated conversation and the prioritization exercise. The last part of that is the survey. The survey mostly is there to provide demographic context for what we're getting from anecdotally from the conversation. So the sort of quantitative context to the qualitative information, which is generally our priority. Any questions about any of this? Any thoughts? So, here I'd like to today go through this survey. This is actually the survey that we used for last year's needs assessment, which was focused on mental health, so you'll notice that there are questions that are more specific to that. But because there's a great deal of intersectionality between substance use, homelessness, mental health, and HIV, those things are all addressed herein, as well as incarceration, a few other pieces that are specific called out here. So I guess the next step would be, so any question, any further questions, any additional questions about scope of work before we move on to the survey?
How long do you anticipate? What range of time?
That's a timeline is, we will be presenting our results at the August full council meeting, which is the 27th of August, I believe. It's the fourth Monday of August. 28th. So generally, we will use May, June, July to gather data, and I'll spend most of August putting that together and synthesizing it and putting it in a sort of presentation-worthy form. We also have been, in the past few years, hiring an intern to help me with some of the logistical pieces related to this.
And how many surveys do you think you'll be able to accomplish or want to accomplish?
In the past couple years, our number, my target number has been 100 plus. Last year, I believe we hit 85. I had to disqualify a few of those because I had pretty serious reason to believe they were not HIV positive. So we were about 80 last year. And the year before, I think we were right around that number, high 70s. I think the crystal meth one, which is the 3 years ago, was maybe a little bit higher than that. So we're hovering right in there in the low 80s, high 70s, pretty consistently, although every year I endeavor to break that 100 participant mark.
Another, so at the beginning, this work group goes through like the survey tool and outreach and sort of setting up the stage for the needs assessment to be carried out by Dave and the intern. And the work group's role changes as the work is continued. So eventually, closer to that August date, all of the data is brought back to the work group, which develops recommendations. So those the recommendations are all presented to the council along with the data.
Yeah. So if it is when we eventually we will get to our last agenda item, which is setting up further meeting dates. I'd like to try and schedule something for August. Now I know that that's really far out and maybe it will be challenging, but I would like to at least get something on people's calendar. If we have to move it later down the road at some point, that's fine. But I've often had trouble getting people to return for that last meeting wherein we developed those recommendations. And I think it's really important to have community, other collaborators, community collaborators, get their eyes on it and maybe have something to say about how we present this. Yeah? Cool. So, got a little over an hour left. This sometimes can go really quickly, and sometimes it can be a little bit of a slow process, but I do encourage you guys to really give me any thoughts you have on this. This base survey has been slightly tweaked, but it's essentially what we've been using for the past 4 years since I came on board with council support. So some of this has been workable and functional in the past, but if you have thoughts about things, specific ideas that are have not been addressed here that need to be called out, please. So I guess we can just begin with first question. Age seems like an appropriate question we should be looking at. Often, you know, that that 45 through 65 is what we see most. That we have endeavored to. I was expecting somebody here from Larkin, but they are not here. But last year we got actually a few more youth, and I know that one of the things we saw last year was that youth was inordinately affected by homelessness among our HIV positive population. Any thoughts on how this question is phrased? Can we just move on?
I think you might want to bring that down to 16 specifically, since there's so much that's moving in the city around homelessness, because they actually have a group attached to local homeless coordinating board for Tay Youth, and it's starting somewhere around age 16, and they're actually looking at housing for youth that young, and I can assume that it might be impacted by youth that might be HIV positive, but that's just my thought.
I think so. Maybe I just call it under 18. All right. Race. Anything needed there? Gender. Your gender identity.
We also have, there's so few HIV positive trans FM that it would actually be an identifier. Yeah.
It's true.
Might as well just do trans, right?
I think there's literally something like 2 or something. It's a really tiny amount. At least in Aries. I can just make that change. Some of these things are just the way last year's work group decided they wanted to phrase them. Sexual orientation, anything we feel like needs to be added or pulled away? Question 4. No objections?
No.
How long have you been living with HIV? I guess we could just go 0 to 5 years there instead of 1. Engaged in medical care. Last time you saw your primary medical care provider. Anything we should add to question 8? Any place specific that we're missing?
Larkin isn't on there, is that right?
No, I guess it is not. These people are... They do see. There's like a nurse comes in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a doctor, yeah. They have a nurse.
What about Native American?
Okay.
Hey, what question do you
have? 8.
For 8.
Which is crazy to me because we actually had somebody from Native American on the
work
group last year
time?
That they didn't
want to include it.
Didn't ask to have themselves included.
This is mostly targeting people who get services at these locations, but there's also some people getting care in private.
I think that these are the ones that are on this list are just where people in areas are primarily what the number wise where we're seeing most people are getting accessing primary care. So anything that's left off is just because oversight or it's a small number. I guess we can take St. Mary's off.
There's still people still going.
Yeah, Dignity Health is still there. Mm-hmm.
I thought they just closed their clinic.
People are still going there right now.
They still get,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
I don't know if it's actually closing or not. It's kind of...
Well, we'll leave it on until they've proven that they're no longer, that they're completely defunct.
Are still seeing their doctor.
Anything else? Are you using ARTs? Are you virally undetectable? Comorbidities, anything in here that you feel like definitely needs to be added in? Nope. Receiving medical benefits. / health coverage. This one is always a little bit challenging. I definitely do see a lot of people filling out this survey with a not necessarily understanding what that means because we're specifically talking about insurance. A lot of this was developed while at like pre-ACA during the initial LIP rollout. So that was a big concern at the time. I think we're seeing numbers that are mostly that most people, most HIV positive people have health benefits, except for I guess probably some of the low functioning people who are having challenges with mental health and undocumented people. So I'm not sure if anyone has any thoughts on a way we can add an additional question or clarify this in some way.
Would it make any sense to put in there? Well, we always say that Healthy San Francisco is not an insurance company.
That's true.
Like just a little parenthesis saying not Healthy San Francisco.
Yeah.
But it is one of the options on 13.
It is one of the options because it is there are people, specifically undocumented people, who are, like, that is where they're getting their...
Well, so we're actually asking health coverage, but not insurance.
Not insurance. I mean, it doesn't say insurance. We don't mean necessarily insurance. We just mean who's paying for your medical care.
Okay, no, that's cool. That,
if
that
anyone.
So that would include it.
Yeah.
I wonder if it would just help people... People would have a bit more recognition if you said, like, do you have health insurance / health coverage? You want to have health coverage because you're including Healthy San Francisco, but I wonder if the phrasing medical benefits confuses just the average consumer. I think it's just known more widely as insurance.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that part of the reason why benefits was put in there is because there was such a that like the verbiage around sort of like benefits navigation and that kind of stuff was such a big topic of conversation a couple of years ago. But that makes sense to me. Where do you receive your medical insurance or health coverage? Anything I'm missing here?
Well, you don't have just plain Medi-Cal.
I guess I would, yeah. I'm not sure if leaving Cover California in there is, because I feel like that is maybe, like, people hear the phrase Cover California, but primarily most consumers still use sort of Medicare and Medi-Cal as standard, you know what I mean? Is that?
That's the lingo.
It's
you know,
people are more comfortable with that.
I have ACA, no, I have Obamacare. So
exactly.
It's,
yeah.
It's
so do we feel like I should just put in Medicare and Medi-Cal and leave out Cover California altogether? Because that's
I've never heard any of our clients refer to it as that.
Well, no, I mean, I think when people talk about having Obamacare or Covered California, they're not talking about Medi-Cal expansion. They're talking about private insurance. They're the people who have had to get on, who have gotten on the plans,
right.
On the exchange.
The exchange.
Yeah.
So I think you need to leave it there because we do have folks who have been moved on to the exchange off of Medi-Cal, but that's, I think, how our patients think about it. There's the exchange, there's Medi-Cal, and then Medicare.
That's a good point. I think there's probably not a lot of people who are homeless who are in that situation, I would guess, but it's still worth leaving in.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I will just put Medi-Cal in and then leave Cover California there.
But you also mentioned that you're also covering unstably housed people.
That's true, and it is self-report, so I think that is going to be, you know, I think in my mind that means whether they are truly homeless, living in a shelter, in like 28-day emergency housing, in an SRO that they have an intention of leaving at some point soon, sleeping on somebody's couch, sleeping, you know, staying at a partner's house or, you know, somewhere, or family. I think all of those things apply. And again, it's not my intention to sort of be aggressively investigative around what they mean when they say they're unstably housed or homeless.
Yeah. Because some of those people who are unstably housed but not so stable as far as like their house, like their couch surfing,
I guess they could be working.
Kind of working.
Yeah.
Have some type of insurance that's not necessarily very common.
I mean, you would probably know better. Most of the clients that I've worked with when I was still working with clients who were sort of having issues with homelessness were not working. So, yeah. Thank you for adding that in.
I wonder, too, now that there's Covered California and we're thinking about that as private insurance, if you want to change the private insurance one to, like, employer-based insurance, because that's...
Maybe, like, non-covered.
Right, non-covered.
Right.
I think employer-based...
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So it would be incumbent on whoever's doing these interviews to know the lingo and be able to talk to. So when someone says, what do you mean, or what's the difference, that
yeah.
they would be able
mm-hmm.
to explain that.
That's me, mostly.
Oh, okay.
Lucky
you.
I mean, and I have an intern who helps with that, but I haven't hired that person yet, so I don't know what their experience level is. We do it, endeavor to hire somebody who has at least some understanding of the continuum of care, but we'll see. Alright, anything else for question 13? Question 14, do you feel like you have adequate support, accessing benefits, insurance, let's change that to insurance, /health coverage.
Do you ever get people who write in ADAP? I feel like we have a lot of patients who think that ADAP is their insurance. Mm-hmm. Like,
I have people ask. I think I probably have people written in as other ADAP, and I've definitely had people ask that where does ADAP fall in this?
Yeah.
And I've explained to them that it's not strictly what we're talking about here. Primary source of income. Anything I'm missing here?
Would you want to add, like, if it's someone who's younger under the care of somebody else, or getting, you know, like, getting money from a partner or a family member? Or I guess that could just fall under other.
Yeah, but I think that giving them the option of potentially, like, I'm not sure exactly how to phrase that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If you got CalWORKs, then you would be CalWORKs grants, and that means that you would have a family or children.
Yeah, CalWORKs should be on this list.
Okay.
Is CAP considered general assistance?
Yeah.
And then also, there's a really large population. I mean, they've been housing them, but of folks receiving VA. Veterans in San Francisco.
Okay, so CalWORKs and VA. Monthly income seems pretty straightforward. I think here we start to get into some of the things that may really apply to the population we're looking at here. What best describes your home, your living situation?
Dave, really quick, going back to number 16.
Yeah.
What exactly are we trying to capture in here? Because there is such a wide gap.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at more than 1,000 or more than 3,000, you kind of miss people that are getting SSI or SSDI benefits because they're either going to be on one way or the other, and then there's
right.
a big gap again. Might there need to be another number in there just so we know kind of where people are there?
I guess that's true,
or
because we're jumping right to, and if you're making more than $3,000, you're not getting Ryan White benefits anyway, so you would be not technically under our purview. What would you suggest?
I think in general, I'm looking at like 1,200 that would separate people getting those benefits versus not. But I don't know how you would divide that up. Or I don't know if that even really matters, that we're looking specifically at that population.
I mean, I think that anyone on the high end of the scale is only pointing to, I don't know. That there, sometimes when we look at these things, if we get some of these unexpected answers, then basically that just like we have a weird anomalous element in there that we hadn't expected. And sometimes having those responses can point towards something interesting, data wise. But I agree that 3,000 is probably we're never gonna see anyone who's making that kind of money.
I feel like it would capture more people if the brackets were more broken down, like 1,500.
Yeah,
out
of
1,500.
That's what
yeah,
I was thinking.
I think 1,500 is probably.
Because then you would know who's making like 11 or 12, which is
yeah.
going to be a lot more people.
I think we could just probably stop at 15 and wouldn't even, and don't know about even going beyond that.
Yeah, it's situational. And it could be a single mother with two children who are HIV.
That's true.
Positive.
Yeah, I would
yeah,
leave it.
There are some people that get higher levels of SSDI.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 and then up to 3, and then or more than 3.
I would keep it because you could get Ryan White if you're making, like
your family.
Yeah, or if you're getting things that are not covered by Medi-Cal, even if you're making more.
Mm-hmm.
Like Shanta services, you don't have to have a cap, for instance.
That's true.
One other thing is that HUD also asks for a non-cap